Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive with us. Today, we are going to be tackling a legal case that's really got all the makings of a business thriller.
Oh.
With a legal twist.
Okay. I like it.
And it all kind of revolves around this thing called the implied covenant.
Right.
Of good faith and fair dealing in contracts.
Yes. This is a fascinating concept. And
yeah.
This case really does illustrate how even when something's not, you know, explicitly written out in a contract, there's still this expectation of fairness.
Right.
You know, it's this unwritten rule that can have a big impact, particularly in the business world.
Absolutely. So for our deep dive today, we are looking at Seidenberg v. Sabema Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And our sources for this are a case brief that really lays it all out pretty nicely. And then we also have the full 2002 court decision from the appellate division.
Okay.
So we were talking about Richard Seidenberg and Eric Raymond, and they own these two very successful insurance brokerage firms, and they sold their companies to Summit Bank, which a major financial institution.
Big deal,
yeah.
So the deal, you know, on its surface, seemed pretty straightforward.
It seemed like a pretty good deal.
They get shares in the bank's parent company.
Yep.
And they're going to continue to manage not just their existing firms, but any future insurance businesses that Summit acquired.
That's right.
So that sounds like a pretty sweet deal, at least initially, but I'm guessing this is where things took a turn.
Where the story gets interesting.
Yeah.
So Seidenberg and Raymond, they claimed that Summit Bank didn't quite hold up their end of the bargain and essentially breached this implied covenant.
Yeah.
Of good faith and fair dealing.
So we keep hearing this phrase, implied covenant.
Yes.
Can you kind of unpack that a little bit for me and for our listeners?
Yep.
What does that actually mean in a practical sense? So think of it this way. Every contract kind of has this underlying expectation that both sides will act honestly and fairly.
Okay.
Even if it's not spelled out word for word, it's like an unspoken agreement that neither party will try to sabotage the deal or prevent the other aside from getting what they were promised.
Okay, so in this case, Seidenberg and Raymond were saying that Summit Bank was like throwing a wrench in the works, even though it wasn't explicitly stated in the contract.
That's exactly it. They were alleging that Summit didn't provide the support they needed, delayed marketing campaigns, withheld important information. All these actions, they argued, made it impossible for them to reach that level of success they needed to get those bonuses they were promised.
So they were basically being set up to fail.
That's what they were claiming.
Okay. So what was Summit Bank's response to all of this?
Well, Summit Bank countered by saying they were totally within their rights to terminate the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And that Seidenberg and Raymond, as you know, experienced businessmen should have known better than to rely on anything that wasn't, you know, explicitly written in that contract.
So it kind of became a he said, she said.
Yeah.
With both sides arguing their interpretation of the agreement and whether there was like bad faith.
But interpretation.
With Seidenberg and Raymond claiming bad faith and Summit Bank saying, hey, we acted within the bounds of the contract.
Okay.
And of course, this all goes to a higher court, to the appellate division. And that's where things get really interesting.
Okay. So what happened? What did the court decide?
Well,
did they side with the bank or with the businessmen? I'm on the edge of my seat here.
Right. So they actually sided with Seidenberg and Raymond.
Oh, wow.
And said that their claims deserve to be heard in court.
And that this implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, it applies to all contracts in New Jersey, no matter how experienced the people involved are.
That's huge.
It is.
So that's a really significant ruling. Mm-hmm. It means even if something isn't spelled out, you know, in black and white, there's still this expectation of fairness in how people uphold their end of a deal.
That's exactly right.
What are the implications of that? Like, what does that actually mean for someone who might be entering into a contract?
Think of it as a safety net. It basically means that even if you don't have every single little detail written down, you can still have legal recourse if the other party acts in a way that goes against the spirit of your agreement. It's protection against those who might try to exploit loopholes or take advantage of things not being explicitly stated.
That makes sense. It's like the court is saying, look, we expect people to deal with each other fairly. And honestly.
Yes.
Even in the fine print.
Even in the fine print. Exactly.
So are there specific examples where this comes into play?
The court actually highlighted three different scenarios where this principle can be applied.
Okay.
The first one is when a contract doesn't explicitly address something.
Right.
That's really crucial for the parties to achieve their goals.
Uh-huh.
It's like having a recipe with missing ingredients. You can't quite bake the cake properly.
Okay, so in those cases, the implied covenant kind of steps in to fill in those gaps.
That's right.
And make sure that everyone's reasonable expectations are protected, even if they weren't spelled out, you know, in detail.
Mm-hmm. Like reading between the lines.
Right.
To understand the true intention of the agreement.
So is there like an example?
A great example is a case involving a retirement community.
Okay.
They had this policy of allowing residents to stay as long as they were financially and physically capable.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was this wasn't clearly stated in the contract.
Uh-oh.
And one resident was asked to leave.
Yeah.
And they argued that the community's actions went against that implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
Interesting.
So they were claiming that the community's policy, even though it wasn't in the contract, created a reasonable expectation that they could stay as long as they met the criteria.
Yeah. So it was like an unspoken
agreement
based
on the policy.
So did the court agree?
They did. The court basically said that the community couldn't just kick the resident out just because the specifics weren't spelled out in the contract.
Interesting.
This implied covenant protected the resident's reasonable expectation of continued residency.
So that is a really good example of how, you know, this can actually protect people's interests even when something's not explicitly stated.
It highlights the importance of looking beyond just the words and considering, like, spirit of the agreement.
Spirit of the agreement, absolutely.
So what about the second?
Okay, so the second scenario is the one that was front and center in the Seidenberg case.
Mm-hmm.
This is where one party tries to use bad faith as a way to justify ending a contract, even if they technically have the right to do so.
Interesting.
It's like using a loophole to get out of a deal when you're not really supposed to.
So it's not just about having the right.
It's the intention.
To terminate, but it's about.
It's the intention.
The intention behind it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So a good example of this is a case where a manufacturer.
Right.
Had an agreement with a distributor.
Okay.
And they had the right to end it according to the contract, but they did it in a way that just seemed really unfair.
What do you mean? Did they like cut them off?
Well, not quite like that, but they basically made it impossible for the distributor to meet their sales quotas, which then gave them the reason to terminate the agreement.
Oh, wow. So they're like setting them up to fail.
Exactly.
Halloween.
The court saw right through it and said that the manufacturer breached this implied covenant by using their right to terminate in bad faith.
That's so sneaky. It seems like they were trying to find a way to like technically stay within the rules, but
just find a way to weasel out of it. That, exactly. Yeah. And that's why this covenant is so important, because it acts as this safeguard against that kind of maneuvering and ensures that people don't abuse their contractual rights to harm the other party.
So we've got one scenario where the implied covenant is filling in gaps in a contract.
Yes.
Another where it's preventing like unfair terminations.
That's right.
What's the third scenario?
The third one deals with situations where one party in a contract has the power to make decisions about how they fulfill their obligations. Yeah. It's like a recipe that says add a pinch of salt.
Okay.
You know, it's up to the chef to decide how much salt is actually needed.
Right. So it's about making sure that the person with that power isn't abusing it or using it to unfairly disadvantage the other party, that those decisions are being made in good faith.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got it. And to illustrate this, we can look at a case where a contract gave one party the power to set prices. So they had a lot of control over this key part of the agreement.
Yeah.
The question was, could they use that power to raise prices to like an unreasonable level?
That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Right.
Did the court allow them to just charge whatever they wanted just because the contract gave them that power?
The court said while they had the power to set prices, they couldn't do so in a way that was, you know, arbitrary, unfair, or intended to prevent the other party from getting what they were reasonably expecting from the contract.
Okay.
Basically, the court said that having that power comes with the responsibility to use it.
Right.
Fairly.
It would be very unfair if one party could use that to, like,
right,
exploit the other party.
Absolutely.
Or completely undermine the purpose of the agreement.
Yeah. This third scenario ensures that even when someone has the power to make certain decisions within a contract, they still have to act in good faith and not abuse that power.
So we've got filling in missing pieces of a contract, preventing unfair terminations, and ensuring responsible use of decision-making power. That's a
good overview.
Great overview.
Of how this implied covenant works in practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reminder that contracts are about more than just the words that are written down.
Yeah.
They're built on this foundation of trust, fairness, and the expectation that both parties will act in a way that honors the spirit.
That's like an invisible handshake, ensuring a level playing field and preventing one party from taking advantage of the other.
Exactly.
So this has been incredibly insightful, but let's get down to, like, the nitty gritty. How do you actually prove bad faith in court? That feels like it would be so difficult.
It's tricky.
To do, like, there's no flashing sign that says, you know, bad faith.
You're absolutely right.
When someone's acting unfairly.
Yeah. Proving someone's intentions is always tricky, especially in a legal setting, but it's not impossible.
Right.
The key is to gather evidence that reveals a pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
Actions that go beyond just, you know, making a bad business decision or a simple mistake.
So it's not just about things going wrong or deal falling apart.
Yeah.
It's about showing a deliberate attempt to undermine the agreement and prevent the other party from getting what they were entitled to.
It's about demonstrating this lack of honesty and fairness that contradicts that fundamental principle of a contractual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like piecing together a puzzle.
Yeah.
We need those little bits of evidence from different sources, actions, communications, even inactions to create that clear picture of bad faith.
So what kind of evidence would actually hold up in court? Like, what should people be looking for if they suspect?
Well, think back to the Seidenberg case.
Okay.
Right. They presented evidence of Summit Bank delaying those marketing efforts, withholding that crucial information, and failing to provide that support that they had promised.
Right.
It wasn't just one or two isolated incidents. It was this consistent pattern of behavior that hampered their ability to grow the business and earn those bonuses.
So documentation is key.
Documentation is key.
Emails, meeting minutes, anything that shows a clear pattern of actions that kind of deviate.
Absolutely.
From that spirit of the agreement.
And witness testimony is also incredibly powerful.
Right.
Having those people who are involved in the dealings and can speak to those actions and intentions of the parties can really strengthen a case.
Yeah. It's about building that narrative that's supported by, like, concrete evidence that paints a convincing picture.
Exactly. It's not just about feeling like someone acted unfairly.
Right.
It's about proving it.
It sounds like proving bad faith is a high bar to clear.
It's not easy.
It requires a lot of strategy and careful documentation.
It does.
Make sure.
But the Seidenberg case demonstrates that the courts are willing to protect those who are victims of bad faith.
Absolutely.
Even in complex business dealings.
So what's the takeaway for our listeners today? What can they learn from this case? And
be thorough and attentive when entering into any agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just skim through the fine print.
Yeah.
Really take the time to understand what you're agreeing to and make sure it aligns with your expectations.
It's like that old saying, an ounce of prevention
is
worth a pound of cure.
Right.
Much easier to
address it
up front. Those potential issues up front.
Then try
and untangle them later.
Yeah. And this applies to any agreement, whether it's, you know, a big business deal or
just, you know, a simple contract.
Mm-hmm.
Clear communication, careful documentation can go a long way.
Huge.
In preventing disputes.
Absolutely.
And misunderstandings down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if there's one golden rule, it's document.
Document, document, document.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Keep a record of all those conversations, agreements, and any actions taken. Those records can be invaluable if a dispute does arise.
Exactly.
Later on.
It's all about protecting yourself and ensuring that you have that evidence you need to support your case if you ever need to prove.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been a really insightful deep dive into the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. a principle that really underscores the importance of fairness and honesty.
Absolutely.
In any agreement.
In any agreement.
It's a reminder that contracts are more than just pieces of paper.
Yeah.
They represent a commitment.
A commitment.
Built on trust.
Built on trust.
And mutual respect.
Respect. And by understanding this concept and, you know, operating with integrity.
Yes.
You can navigate the world of agreements with confidence.
With confidence.
And as always, we like to leave our listeners with something to ponder.
Of course.
So think about your own agreements, both personal and professional.
Mm-hmm.
How much weight do you give to unspoken expectations and good faith when entering into those
food for thought
agreements? That's all the time we have for today, but we'll see you all next time.
Until next time.
For another deep dive.
Stay curious.